Thought for today. Horsemanship without a horse. Now, when people see this as a thought for today, they're going to say, that's a statement that has very little veracity or very little interest to it. Horsemanship without a horse. But horsemanship without a horse is our topic today. And it's surprising how it's going to develop. Human beings come on earth, or wherever they come, and they come in love. Human beings are natural love. They love everything, they love everybody, they are just very happy people. Little people only know love. You say, well, some little people don't have the opportunity to know love. They have only unhappiness in their life because they're living in poverty, or they're living in limitation, or they're living in dire circumstances. They only know love. They don't know that the circumstances they're living in are not nice. They don't know the circumstances that they're expressing themselves in is not the same circumstance that everybody else, and they don't really care what everybody else is, because for them there is no one else but themselves. They are the purest love. And if they are trained to believe that every circumstance in their life is beautiful and lovely and wonderful and always is and always will be, so it is. If they are trained to think that they're living in poverty or in lack or in limitation of any sort, then that's what they're going to believe too. Now, love allows you to do everything and be everything and just have a lot of fun. Just go through life with a smile on your face and joy in your heart. But what about a divine person? What is a divine person? How does he differ from an ordinary human being? Well, a divine person expresses beingness. A divine person expresses, if you could say, allness, oneness, not otherness. The tendency is to think that it might be otherness, but it's not. It's allness, it's oneness. It is not including all the world, as though the world were outside, but it's being all the world. It's being itself. Divine qualities within each of us are our beingness. Now, a little child has no interest in a horse. He has an interest in his toe or his thumb. He has an interest in feeling its nose, its fingers investigate everything. Its smell investigates everything. Its teeth, which it doesn't have, but its gums investigate everything. They chew and they munch on everything. And it loves everything. But then a divine awareness seems to become present in the little person, and they look around themselves and they see that here is a board, here is a shelf, here is something that is on the edge of their crib, and they grab a hold of it. And they stand up and they say, ah, we can see further. And they look further. And there is their crib. There is their room. There is their mother, their father, their family. It belongs to them. Now, their divine self is budding, is revealing itself. They're listening within, because the babble they hear without is a senseless babble. The talk that they hear is indescribable and undefinable. And they don't pay much attention to that, except for the emotion that is expressed in the talk. When the mother is so, and then they sort of giggle and smile and they say, that's my kind of talk, you know. Just feeling, sense. Well, as this child develops, if it were able to develop without human attitudes that seem to become enmeshed upon it, if it could develop in a sense of joy and peace and harmony, it would find that the world around it is a pretty wonderful place. And the world around it does everything it wants the world around it to do. The little child finds the world around it does everything that it wants the world around it to do. Now think of that. The little child is only concerned about itself. It's not concerned whether somebody else is hungry, somebody else needs something, somebody else needs their pants changed or whatever. It's only concerned about itself. All the world exists for it. You see, the little child is a horseman without a horse. He is the master of his world, and he doesn't even know that he's the master of his world. He just is, because this is his divine beingness. Now, you and I, we are at a stage here that we're all taking horseman training right now, and we're thinking, how can I train the horse? How can I train the horse? How can I teach the horse to do something? How can I teach the horse what I want it to do? How can I teach it? Now, a little child doesn't do that. A little child goes up to this gigantic horse and puts its arm around the leg of the horse and says, I love you. And the horse looks down at this little child and doesn't move its leg because it doesn't want to hurt the child. It knows that its leg is so much bigger than the child and that it is so much bigger. It senses what the child wants. The child wants something to play with and somebody to play with it. And so the horse plays with the child. Have you ever seen a horse play with a child? You probably won't either, because parents and adults are afraid that the horse might hurt the child. As Anita walks with Loka, she's walking this horse around our acreage here and other areas. And she wears big boots to keep the horse from stepping on her feet. Of course, it's not going to keep the horse from stepping on her feet. She wears clothing that is not going to let her have the roughness of the horse against her skin. She takes a rope to make the horse come with her. She puts a halter on the horse to make sure that it'll follow her wherever she goes. Mary had a little lamb whose fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. Mary went to school one day, and the lamb followed her there, and the story goes on. Boys have dogs that love them, and they follow them everywhere. Girls oftentimes have dogs or cats, and the cats follow them everywhere. We had on the 200 acres 4 or 5 cats and 6 dogs. They just keep multiplying. We take them in like the stray waifs that they are, and we love them unconditionally, and they know it. And as we go for a walk on the miles of paths, these cats go with us, and they're running here and running there and jumping up a tree and having fun with us. The dogs go with us. It's a family affair. And when I sit down to meditate, they all come close and snuggle in and want to get in those vibrations because they know love. How did I train those dogs and cats to do that? I didn't. I just love them. I was alone with them. Mark had gone off to do something else, and I was alone with them. And I fed them, and I cared for them, and I loved them. And I didn't care whether they sat on the furniture or whether they didn't. I didn't care whether they were running in and out of the house or not. On a stormy night, I tried to keep them in one time, and they quickly notified me that that wasn't their choice. As they squatted down on my chest and did their duty. Ah. And so I left the kitty doggy door open for them to go in and out in the stormy night. And they said, hey, we're used to this. This is our world. We're in charge. And they came and went and came and went. But I didn't train them to walk with me, but they walked with me. The day Anita says to her horse, whosever horse it is, but it's the horse that she's playing with, I love you unconditionally. I enjoy your company. And then she says to the horse mentally, come here. And the horse will come to her. And she'll say to the horse, sit down. And the horse will sit down. And horses don't normally sit down. But it'll sit down on its hind haunches. And then she'll say, well, stand up. Let's go now. And so the horse sits down on its forward haunches and hind haunches and says, Anita, come, sit on my back. Which is a thought Anita had in her mind. And the horse got the drift. And so Anita went over and sat on the horse. And the horse stood up and carried her gently, wonderfully. And Anita didn't have any stirrups or a saddle. And so when the horse went up, splat, 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 splat. Well, now that's the way normal people ride a horse. They post and hold their butt off the saddle so they don't get their butt worn out. But Anita flowed with the horse. She rode with the horse as though she and the horse were one. The magical quality of being one. Because Anita never lost her childhood awareness of being one as all. And so she communicated this to the horse. And the horse communicated to Anita, I agree. Horsemanship is not training the horse. Horsemanship is training the trainer. How do we train the horse? We train the horse first by training ourselves, where a horsemanship is being practiced without a horse. Do you love yourself? Oh, yes, of course. Do you enjoy being with yourself? Oh, yes, of course. Do you always do everything that comes to your heart to do? Mostly. Do you always follow your intuition? Do you always follow that inner lead about yourself? Do you always do what your heart tells you to do? Do you like yourself? Think about it. The horse likes himself. He goes out and he rolls on his back. Well, I haven't seen that too often. Oh, sure, just like a dog. They love to scratch their back and lay down and roll out. They don't need to scratch their back. It's just a pleasant feeling. You don't need a massage ever. It's just a pleasant feeling. Because your body is the temple of the living spirit. Every organ, action, function of your body is perfect all the time. But at times you don't realize this. You don't recognize it. You don't accept it as a fact. And because you don't accept it as a fact, then it sort of is distant from you. The true horseman trains himself first without a horse. They may read a book about it. They may listen to what someone else says. They may watch someone else train a horse. But the master at the craft of horsemanship is the one who reads nothing, sees nothing, acts from their heart. What would you like the horse to do? Come, then. Tell the horse to come. Say, I love you, Joe. Come on. I love you, Loka. Come on. When Ellen goes into the paddock to get Loka, the horse runs away from her and tries to escape. Really? The horse comes to her. Because the horse knows that Anita is only there to love it. And the horse is not frightened. It has had dogs around it barking at it. So it just goes over and looks at the dog. What are you barking for? You know? You get so much more if you just be loving like me, you know. And the dogs learn these things from the horses too. When does a dog ever get stepped on by a horse? When it's separate from the horse. When it's one with the horse, it could never be stepped on. Dogs run to the fox and hounds and have for centuries. And in doing it, they are one with the horses. They are right at the horse's heels or right at the horse's forelegs. They are one. Horsemanship is being one with yourself first and then one with whatever you are training, whether it is a giant stallion standing many hands above your head or whether it's a little pony that you could stand there and open your legs and you could walk through and you could sit down. It doesn't matter. It is a life force. It is nature, and you are one with it. And as a true horseman thinks these things, miracles happen. Now, should you see a horseman being with his horse without a rope, without a halter, you think to yourself, my, isn't that wonderful training? My, isn't that wonderful control and manipulation? But stop and think what it really is. First, the trainer loved himself. The trainer thought she was a very wonderful person. The trainer thought everything was in divine order. The trainer just liked themselves. And then secondly, the trainer included in their world whatever they wanted. If they wanted a horse or a dog, if they wanted a llama, if they wanted a gazelle, if they want a moose, here you are out in the forest and all the mooses are going around. Big, magnificent animals, wild animals, frightening in their glory. But you love yourself. And you say to the moose, moose, you say, mooses, I love you. The world is alive with the sound of music. And the mooses look over at you and they trumpet their sound and say, we agree, we agree, we agree. And then you say, ah, what a wonderful concert we make. Come on over and join me. And so the moose come over and join you. Their antlers are gorgeous, standing 5 to 8 feet across. Magnificent. It's spring, and there's a fuzz on their antler like a soft velvet. And you reach up to touch it, and it's tender, because under it new bone is growing, and it has a tenderness of it. And the moose knows you are a tender person and lets you touch their antler. And the baby moose come and sit down next to you. And the mom and the papa moose gather around you and say, "Hey, where's that concert we're going to have?" And so you sing, and they sing with you. They cannot carry a tune in a basket, but they have their own melody, and you listen to their melody and you revel in it. And then you say to the moose, "Hey, it's getting twilight, I must get back now. I have a few miles to go before dark." And the moose said, "Hey, have you ever ridden on a moose?" And you say, "No." And the moose says, "Well, nobody else has either. Would you like to ride on a moose?" "Sure." So the moose bends down, folds its legs, and says, "Step on." And so you step on the moose. And you tell the moose, "My car is over this way, or my tent is over this way, or I'm going that way." And so the moose swiftly, smoothly carries you out of the forest to the edge of the forest where its camping ground is. And it lets you off. It gets down on its forelegs and hind legs, and you just step off. And you gently take your face and you caress their horn. You caress their nuzzle. And you're one with them. Go ahead, laugh. Tell me I'm wrong. Go ahead, tell me. Do you think that a lion trainer trains a lion only by fear? The lion trainer trains the lion by love. The lion trainer trains the lion only by love. Because that lion is so powerful and so strong, if it wanted to, it could take its trainer in one gulp. Yeah. But it's trained by love. Now, the lion trainer doesn't have a very exciting act if the lion looks tame. So he teaches the lion to look ugly, to look wild, to look ferocious. And he takes his whip and he snaps the whip, and the lion knows that the trainer's not going to hit him. Plus the fact the lion knows that only on its ears or nose, if the trainer hits him, it's going to hurt. On its hide, it wouldn't bother him at all. But the trainer does not hit the lion. He snaps the whip and he makes the noises. And the lion says, "Ah, yes, we must be amusing. We have that crowd out there that are screaming and hollering, acting like a bunch of wild animals. And here we are, the most cultured, natural, gentle, caring beings on earth, because we're trained by love." And the lion does everything its trainer wants it to do. The lion opens its mouth, and the trainer sticks his head in there. And the lion says, "I really am not into heads these days, you know." And the lion sort of yawns, and the trainer takes his head out. It looks ferocious. It looks terrible. But it's not. So long as the lion is held in respect by the trainer, so long as the trainer likes himself, so long as the trainer loves himself and knows what he wants to do with the lion, knows how he wants to play the game, the lion will play the game. If the trainer ever hears of lions who have bit the trainer's head off, he looks askant at his lion. He says, "You wouldn't do that, would you?" And the lion hadn't even thought about doing it. And so then the lion says, "Well, I'll try it sometime." And chomp, there goes the trainer's head. The trainer never, never, never has the privilege of doubting his actions. The trainer never doubts himself. The trainer never doubts his world. Horsemanship takes place without a horse. The lion trainer trains in his room how he is going to put on a show to make it look ferocious. And he talks to the lions ahead of time. He says, okay, boys, you ready to cooperate on this? We're going to put on a show. Now, I'm not snapping this whip for you. I'm snapping it for all those people out there who need to hear that, to think it's ferocious. Now, stand up on your hind paws and leap at me. But fall short. As if you hit me, you're pretty heavy. I'd go down with a thud. So just fall short. And if your horse has come running back to you, and it's playful, and it stops just short of you, because that's what you have it do. You don't mentally see the horse running into you, because if you mentally see the horse running into you, it will. If you mentally see the lion landing on top of you, it will. Because it's all part of your show. You have to be so dedicated to the truth. You have to be so dedicated to what it is you really want to experience. Your horsemanship must begin and end off stage, in the privacy of your own life, in the privacy of your own thought, in the privacy of your own consciousness. Then you can go out in the world, and like the Pied Piper, they will all come to you. Because your charisma, your flute, will be so magical. All the world will react to you. You walk into a building and you think, I've got these packages. It'd be nice if someone would open the door. You don't say that. You walk into the building, you say, the door is open before me. And as you walk in, people come out the door and say, oh, let me hold the door for you, or come right in. And then somebody else runs back into the building to hold open another door for you. You don't ask for it. The door is open before you. They're part of your game. They are your horses that you have trained in your mind before you train them on the field. And when you train them on the field, you're only being yourself and having fun. Daniel in the lion's den could not have continued in the lion's den if he feared the lions. Because if he had fear for the lions, he would empower them to do to him what they did to others. But because he went in there fearless, he believed in the God within him. He believed in the presence and the power, and he was untouched. Horsemanship begins and ends without a horse. Love and oneness are what make up horsemanship. Love and oneness. It's the only thing. If you have love for yourself and that same love permeating your relationship with your world will respond to you harmoniously, joyously, beautifully. And this is what I share with you. There are many great founders of many great organizations and businesses and companies and religions and philosophies and so forth. And the founders wanted nothing except to talk about their philosophy. But the people had to put a shell around that philosophy. They had to have buildings and they had to have land and they had to have structures. And then the founder gets blamed for these buildings, shells, structures. There was a man who had a church in Los Angeles. It was a big church. His name was Armstrong. And he built this church from nothing to a fabulous university and a fabulous organization, which it is today. And all he did was to teach. But he was a good organizer. He had around him people who loved to build the buildings and create them and do the funding and do those things. And then one time, one of his members came up and said, "You have taken money from the church and used it improperly." And so they tried to put him in jail. They tried to say that he was doing something wrong. And he did nothing. His staff did things, but nothing was wrong. And finally, he was exonerated of the charges. But during the process, people tried to look down on him. And yet, through it all, he stood firm, knowing the truth about himself. And the organization continues today, teaching just as wonderfully as he had to teach all along. The detractors and dementors will come along wanting to take us from our chosen direction. And with their cold breath, with their sapping quality, they will try to destroy you. But if you live in love and in oneness, you will be the greatest horse trainer that ever lived. And if you live in oneness and love, you will be content all the days of your life. Horsemanship without a horse. That's what it's all about. I love you.